Hello, come in. Lie down. Relax. Take a deep breath in. And now breathe out. We'll be your therapists today. You're listening to Triathlon Therapy.
That's too much time. Look at Steve McKenna. Steve, what are you doing, Steve? That's too much time. Advantage Reed.
Mate, nothing will compare to the one you did for Apo the other day. But one thing that we very, very rarely get to say in this sport is we're lucky enough to be joined today by a first-year pro and already an Ironman winner in Regan Holyoake. So thanks for joining us, Regan.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And also very much amazed by your performance on the weekend and also the trajectory of your career, both through the age group racing and into the pro field. Let's start with the weekend. Talk us through it.
Yeah, it was a bit of a dream result, really, for me. Only my second pro Ironman, and to take the win was just, something that dreams are made of. So really super exciting. I had a bit of a rough couple of weeks going into the race, actually. So it certainly wasn't all smooth sailing. I actually fractured my second rib 2.5 weeks out, right at the sternoclavicular joint. So that still giving me a lot of grief, but that was a bit of a concern leading in. I couldn't swim, couldn't breathe really. So kept that quite under wraps. And I'm not really one to complain, and I just sort of go about things. So that was a bit of a concern leading in. I hadn't been able to swim. So I did go to the pool a couple of days beforehand just to test it out. And sort of worked out that if I didn't actually catch, I could just sort of float my arm through. So, and on top of that, I also had a really bad eye infection that turned into an ulcerated cornea. So I was stuck in a dark room for about 7 days with sunglasses on and a towel over my head. So actually just to get to the start line, I was just absolutely thrilled to be there. So, so I was a bit rough.
Wait, let's go back. Let's not skip over that. So when you said you couldn't catch, I'm assuming in the race you just feel like, I'm just going to grin and bear it to get through the swim, or did you just swim pretty much with one arm? How did you get through the swim?
Yeah, so I took some Panadol beforehand and I was just basically trying to grin and bear it, but I did really work out that if I dropped my elbow and didn't catch, then I could sort of just flutter that arm through. So it was a bit rough, and I was pretty much relying on one arm and breathing to the opposite side, but that's okay. These things happen, and we got through. So once I got out of the swim, I was like, oh, it's all uphill from here. It's all downhill from here. It's fine.
You got out of the swim still very rapidly. Talk to me like this, obviously having this long open water swim background, like we've got Lucy Charles, who had a similar trajectory really in how rapidly she rose to the top. I look at it as obviously there's the physical traits of spending of all that aerobic training that you've done, but you've also got to be a different personality, right? Or a bit of a psycho to be able to do that sort of sport. And it would carry across perfectly to Ironman racing.
Yeah. I think so. I, from the age of 12 to about 16, I was spending, 60, 70 Ks in the pool, morning and night, early mornings. So I'm used to working hard, and I like working hard, and I'm used to just that grind. I didn't do any competitive sport from about 17 to 30. So, but it obviously just never leaves you. I think that inbuilt, work ethic and determination and that sort of ability to just grind out the training is definitely one of my strengths and something that would have developed as a junior.
Yeah, and I think we always talk about how there are adaptions that the body makes, from a capillarization aspect, mitochondrial density, all these things happen. And even if you look out of shape or you haven't been doing much, the person who's done that big block of work can return to that fitness way faster than someone who's obviously building to that point for the first time. So as much as I think it instilled some psychological values that work really well for you, I think there's also the physical side of it where you see it all the time that people say, oh, she's come from nowhere. And you look back through their history and you're like, no, not from nowhere. There's a history there. And for you, that 60 or 70K a week is, you know, a massive load for a kid. Just before we move to more adulthood, did that leave you as a bit of a, that sort of training load at such a young age? We see so many swimmers that are just fairly messed up psychologically as they enter the real world, or were you, was it not a drama? Like, if we go through all of them, there's a lot of
Post-career depression. Therapy for a reason. Yeah.
You don't have to say too much, but like, was it all smooth sailing when you moved on from swimming, or was it hard for you to find purpose with other things?
I think I like to think I'm not too messed up, but it certainly led, I think, to an early retirement. Like, to finish a career at 16, like, that's pretty premature. So that load probably did burn me out a little bit quicker than I would have hoped. I think I just found purpose in other things. So I then threw myself into, you know, my studies. I, you know, did quite well at high school and then went to university and then threw myself into that sort of physio degree and then into work. And so I've always sort of, I suppose, had a bit of a personality where whatever I do to, you know, 100%. And I've just really been managed to find those interests and just throw myself into that. So it sort of, I said, softened the blow a little bit of retiring from swimming.
So on the weekend, you pretty much got out the water just behind Radka. Do you think if you didn't have that injury, you could have gone a bit quicker? Were you holding back a bit, or?
I'd like to think so, for sure. My swim, you know, sort of form in training has been, you know, moving really positively. So I would like to think that I could swim a bit harder and faster and take a bit more control. But I just did what I could do on the day to stay with her. And I thought if I can come out close to her, then that's a win given the circumstances.
And then onto the bike in Port, I think when Kate got to you, she said you were having a bit of a rough patch. It wasn't all smooth sailing on the bike either, was it?
No. I really struggled to find my groove for probably the first 130K on the bike. It wasn't until we went through town that I really started to come alive. I had a flat that managed to seal itself, so I just had to put some air in it. I was just really struggling. I was like, seemed to be pushing okay power, but just didn't feel like I was moving anywhere. And yeah, just in a bit of a hole. I could see the splits going out a bit. Radka put about 3.5 minutes into me in the first 40K, I think. So she was flying. I'm really confident in the back end of my Ironman, second half of my bike and my marathon. So I thought I'll just, you know, keep my head in the game, keep pushing my power and just see where I end up. I really didn't expect to catch the girls before T2. That was quite a shock to me when we all came together just before Matthew Flinders. So that sort of filled me with a bit of confidence. But, yeah, I struggled on the bike. Kate came past me and I thought maybe we could work together legally to try and catch Rads, but I just didn't have the legs at the time.
And then so you said you had a lot of confidence in your run. Obviously, since how long have you been going with the sport? Because I know obviously the pro career is you're basically a newborn. What's your journey from age group to pro? What sort of mileage are you doing on the run now to have that level of confidence? Where does that confidence come from that you knew you'd be able to pull out a good marathon?
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm not a runner. Anyone that's seen me run, I'm not a pretty runner. I'm not a natural runner. It doesn't come easy to me. I started the sport at about 30, so I've been doing it for about 4 years. And early on in my career, I just really, well, up until about 12 months ago, I've just really struggled with injuries, run-based injuries, just overloading injuries, you know, glute, hamstring, I've got a labral tear, those sorts of like little niggly things that just meant that I couldn't get any run volume in. I haven't been able to do any speed work. So it's just been a couple of years of just, you know, slow, steady, increasing the amount of run volume that I can do. But I did have a really solid block going into New Zealand, then another solid month after New Zealand where I was able to hit every run session. I don't think I missed a session in anything for the whole sort of, you know, 2 months. So I was just really confident that I ran well in New Zealand, and that was a hard run course, and I'd done a lot more work after that. So I thought if I could just replicate what I did in New Zealand with the consistency and the pace, then, you know, that was going to hold me in good stead. And I could only do that. I couldn't do any more than that. If the other girls were faster, then great, you know, kudos to them. So I was just confident in what I could do and sticking to that plan.
Similar theme to Apo
there. In New Zealand. Yeah, still, 305 in New Zealand and a 303 in Port Macquarie. That's for an apparent non-natural runner, you're doing pretty well. One thing that does stand out is you are an efficient runner, like specifically at Ironman. You came past a few times and I was like, I was impressed, but I was also disappointed how well you were moving considering Kate was, you know, not that far behind at the start. But hey, it was knowing the adversity you had in the, I didn't know about the rib, but I knew about the fact that you couldn't go to Taiwan because of the eye issue. It was good to see, and you really deserved that win. The scenes at the finish line were awesome.
So Regan, with when you, just to get into a little bit more specifics, because I know all our listeners love to hear the nitty gritty details, in terms of run volume, what's like a big run volume week for you? And obviously, are you still doing, like, have you gravitated back towards large swim weeks? Because I have heard rumors that you overall, the overall volume is quite low, although I don't think people realize that you're managing working as well to be able to, so you probably, you know, you can only do as much training as you can absorb. So what's, talk us through the, I guess, without sharing all your coach's secrets, but like, what's your, how do you weigh it up? What would be a classic swim week? What would be a classic, you know, peak run week for Ironman? That's those sort of details.
Yeah, so I do have a relatively low overall weekly volume, but like you said, I'm just trying to fit in work as well, and you've only got 24 hours in a day, so I can only do what I can do. I've just actually started with a swim squad. So Josh from Swim Ace, who's based in Ballarat, I think a few of your fellas swim with him.
Yeah, so we work closely with Josh. Can't recommend him enough. He does a lot with a lot of the RPG guys that need help. Check him out if you want to if you need some, yeah, serious help with your swimming. Sorry, I just had to give him an extra plug because I'm a big fan.
Yeah, no, look, so am I. He's been amazing. So the last couple of weeks I've actually been splitting my weeks between home in Northern Victoria and Ballarat, which is where I'm from originally. So I've recently started swimming with the squad there, and that's been a big game changer, not just in terms of like swimming form, but just in terms of enjoyment as well, because I do all of my training by myself. It's very isolating up here. There's not anyone around that I can train with, so that's pretty tough. Sorry, I went on a tangent. But in terms of overall weeks, run volume, 50 Ks maybe? Yeah, yep, 50, maybe 60 at best. Swimming, I'm swimming a fairly large amount now that I've started with Josh, so probably about 25, maybe 30 Ks a week. And then riding might be 10 hours, 11 hours, right, maybe.
I think people would be absolutely shocked with that run volume. Clint, there's hope for you yet if you still want to do Kona. Just do 50 K a week. Even you could manage that.
In terms of your like longest specific session in that run week, Regan, like are you getting up into the 30s, or is it shorter and more intense? What's that like?
Yeah, I don't do much speed stuff just because to this date my body hasn't, you know, allowed me to do that. I get niggles, you know, as soon as I try and run quick. Even after a half Ironman, if I try and run quick, I'm sore for 2 weeks afterwards in my hammies. So, sorry, what was the question? What was the longest run that I got up to?
So, yeah, what's like the longest specific kind of run during that prep? Like, are you getting up towards the 30s, or are you keeping it mid 20s, or where are you at with that?
Yeah, no, I did a couple, maybe two or three into the 30s. So I think my longest long run was about 3 hours. So that was sort of, you know, and it wasn't quick, like it might have been 450 pace, 455 pace. I probably did two of those maybe for this build.
Tempo for you, Clint, you could do that.
Come on, this isn't a bash Clint session.
Clint's thinking that he doesn't have time to do Kona and this is a nice little refresher that you could still do it. I think there's one thing you need to do it.
There's one thing that's blatantly obvious. The difference between me and Regan is that she's talented and I'm not. So, I was talking to Kate about, and it's something that we've spoken about too, but have you just dropped your hours with work from full-time to kind of having a midweek day off? Is that correct?
Yeah, so I've dropped it quite significantly. So I was full-time up until New Zealand, and then after New Zealand I thought, I'm sort of one foot in, one foot out. I better have a crack at this. So I've dropped down to, 2 to 3 days a week. Sort of 20 to 25 hours a week, which has been a game changer. My training hasn't increased drastically. I'm getting an extra long ride and those sorts of things, but just the ability to recover, just the way I'm feeling, the way I'm hitting sessions, I'm happier. Just feel like a completely different person, whereas I was sort of running on fumes before without really realizing that I was probably burning the candle at both ends and not managing any of my roles. So, yeah.
I think that's a really interesting point, Regan, because we have a lot of younger pros or age groupers who think that they have to go to full time to make it as a pro. And perhaps there's a point for everyone. There'll probably be a point where you're like, okay, now if I want to go top five at world champs, that's the next step. But realistically, I think if you can't make it as a pro in Australia off 2 to 3 days a week, you probably shouldn't be going to, like, I think it's a good balance because it's, we talked about it with Apo too, the financial stress of pro racing can end a lot of people's careers early. But the difference, I did the same. I sort of slowly transitioned from full-time to 3 days a week. And that transition, same as you, I didn't change the training really at all. Well, after I started getting stress fractures and realized I couldn't just jump it all up, but the recovery makes such a difference, and the lack of stress, and I could see, hopefully for you, I think there'll be a transition sooner rather than later where it goes to full time. If your employers are listening, sucked in, it's gonna happen.
that's exactly what I was gonna say. I'm like, maybe don't mention that she wants to leave her job completely. But is that ideally the scenario, Regan, or do you like actually love your work and you find that it's a good balance to training and working?
Oh, I think ideally the scenario is to make this career viable as a triathlete for sure. I do love my work and my employers are great. They give me the flexibility that I need. They're very, very happy for me. They're my biggest supports. But ideally, yes, this is my passion. This is what I want to do. I'm very aware of how old I am and how many years I, potentially have in the sport, despite the fact that my athlete age is still very young. So I want to make the most of it whilst I can, and that work is always there. My physio role will always be there, so I've got plenty of years to do that. So to make this viable is my biggest goal.
And you're 100% right that your athlete age is quite young. I think that I talk about it with other pros all the time, especially retiring pros. It's not like you noticed, like there might be some injuries or other issues, but there's nothing that noticeable in your training that's different. It's just that your willingness to sacrifice or the complications in your life get harder and harder with training. But physically, I think, there's no reason you can't be racing at a really high level, 43, 44 years of age. So there's still some great years of racing ahead and it's pretty exciting. Will you head over to, what's your plan for the rest of the season? What's the biggest goal for the year? Or is that already ticked off? You can just put your feet up.
to get a win is certainly a goal ticked off, sooner than I anticipated. But I am going to go to Nice. I've had a few discussions about whether or not that's a good move. Financially, I know it's a lot of stress, but also the course is really exciting. It's something that excites me. If I'm excited and happy and want to have a go, I will. So Nice will be the next big goal for me.
Awesome. And there's the advantage in a large part for you is you could probably, when you're able to use a catch on both sides, you can probably swim with Lucy Charles. You've then got a media pack around you, which is a huge advantage, as much as people don't like to talk about it too much. The big question would be, like, how would you handle the technical aspects of that bike course and how are you going to deal with that before going?
Yeah, that's a massive consideration. I live in the Goulburn Valley, so we haven't got a hill for about 80 kilometres. So there will have to be some training camps, some, you know, skill development that does happen between now and then. I'm reasonably confident with my ability climbing. And like I said, the tough course doesn't really concern me too much. But, yeah, definitely that technical aspect will have to be a consideration, and it might be some training camps, you know, up north, up Sunny Coast, up near you guys perhaps. But,
Hard because the climbs, there's so much climbing around here, but it's so different to those long switchback Euro climbs. I honestly think your best bet, although it's just the wrong time of year, but, you know, getting to Hotham and Falls Creek and those sort of, they're the only descents I think that are somewhat similar that I know of in Australia. Clint, you might have a better idea, but it's it's really tough. It's a different climbing. Like as soon as I had short punchy hills in races, I felt it absolutely at home. And as soon as I had long winding descents, I was pretty useless against the Euros. And it's just a really hard one to find in Australia without freezing your little feet off in the snow mountains.
Have you found much of a difference? Obviously, you've had a quick rise from age group to pro. Have you found a big difference in the way you race in an age group race versus the pro race, the tactics and stuff? Or is it just still sticking to your numbers?
I mean, there's definitely a difference. I don't think you can compare age group and pro racing in terms of like tactics, and it's a bit more punchy, a bit more surgy, a bit more tactical. Probably the way that the races have panned out for me in both New Zealand and Port Macquarie, I've actually been able to race my own race. I've been, you know, for better or worse, I've been on my own the whole time during those races. I've ridden on my own. And then, you know, been running with some people. But, I think there is a big difference. I just haven't sort of found that so much in my two races.
New Zealand, you had a bit of a – you spent a bit of time with Els, didn't you, like during the middle section of the run?
Yeah, the run was quite exciting. It was Chelsea was off on her own world, and then Jocelyn and Els and myself basically ran together the whole time until she dropped the hammer with 10Ks to go and did her fastest lap. And then I was running with Jocelyn for the last 5K, and she just outkicked me at the end. So I had company on the run the whole time. So that run, actually, I probably ran faster there because I had company, and then that gave me the confidence to realise, okay, I can run faster. I don't have to be as conservative. And led to a better run split than it would have, I'd say.
Can I ask where the name Regan comes from? I know it's a character in one of the Shakespeare, I think it's King Lear or something like that, but I've never heard the name. And actually when you're up on stage, like I knew some facts about you and I was going to ask you some questions, and I was like, you know, first out of the water at New Zealand, fourth place. And then I was like, oh shit, I have no idea how to pronounce the first or last name. And I just sort of muffled it, like, Regan.
It's all right. Pete's just, he's called me Reagan every single time over the line. So he's just like, that it's Regan. So that's good.
Did he get it right on the weekend?
Yeah, he did. He's nailed it now. Okay. Yeah. I think so. I can't remember much. This is going to bring the mood down a little bit, but I think, do you remember Azaria Chamberlain, the dingo ate my baby?
Oh, yeah.
Her brother was called Regan. And I think that's where, no, that doesn't sound right, because I must have been older than that. Maybe that's a story I've made up in my head. But I always thought that I was named after Azaria Chamberlain's brother. Sorry, I don't know. I really don't know. I think it's a bit of a made-up name, and I think it's a male name, but it's a bit different, so, yeah.
Do you ever wonder if your parents just were like, they were so set on having a boy, Out you came. Yeah. Yeah. They're like, whatever, oh, well, we can't out. Switch names now. We're committed.
Yeah, I think so.
And you said Nice is the big goal, but between now and then, any other races, prep races and stuff like that that you're eyeing off?
I'm going to head over to Korea in 3 weeks and do Challenge Korea there. And I might do Sunny Coast 70.3, which I think is about 3 weeks before Nice. But I'll probably have a little bit of downtime after after Korea. That'll be my third Ironman for the year, and Nice will be four. So that's quite a lot in the first year, I'm aware of. So yeah, so that's the plan so far.
Was there any temptation to change that after seeing like a 3:03 run and knowing that you can mix it with the front end to go to the Ironman series race in Cairns and really get a taste of what it may be like in Nice, or are you sticking to the guns with Korea?
There was definitely some temptation to go to Cairns. I had committed to Korea though, and I don't want to go back on my word for that. So, yeah. Cairns is definitely tempting, but Korea's fun and exciting as well. So, yeah.
You're better than most pros. Most pros will just switch stances. There's a $10 difference. They're like, all right, I'm going to that race. but then again, sponsors are not that dissimilar. as soon as you're not worth too much, see you later. No bitterness there.
But when does a pro's plan ever go to plan? You know, set it all out in January and it never happens, right?
Well, some pros are different. You're very familiar with Steve, and when he gives me his plan, I just look at the first race that's coming up and I disregard everything else he's sent through, because I'm like, it's going to change anyway. I'm not going to invest myself into thinking about a race that's going to chop and change 15 times. But then someone like Apo is totally the opposite. He'll be like, I'm going to do this race and this race, and you know he's all in on that and locked in. So yeah, everyone's different. So speaking of sponsorship, Regan, what's the current status, and are you actively pursuing sponsorship? I know some of my athletes after a race, I'm always on them. Now's the time. You send out all your CVs and proposals. Do you have someone doing that for you? What's the current status?
It's pretty grim, the current status, actually. Wynn have been really great to me, and they've jumped on board from the start. So I'm really thankful to Luke and Beth and the team there. But apart from that, I'm very self-funded. I am looking at getting, sort of a proposal and a sponsorship sort of package together, because I'm aware that it's very challenging to live off, you know, prize winnings alone, that sponsorship is just part of the deal. So I am very much an introvert, and I also don't want to sell my soul for a product that, so I don't want to be too reliant on spend too much energy on that, with the awareness that it's part of the game.
Well, both Clint and I both said after the race, you know, that any sponsors out there need to listen to coaches who know what they're talking about. But we both said, like, there's the sort of sky's the limit for what you can achieve in this sport. And I actually think, bigger picture, sometimes being introverted and not doing those cheap sales on, you know, not cheap, cheap marketing that's really cringy to watch on the social media channels. I think longer, bigger picture, and if an athlete's winning, it just makes it so much better for moving product and having value. And I would encourage any sponsors out there, get in early before she becomes too expensive.
But it is a bit of a it's a real time consuming task, right, Regan? And like, when you're working full time, and as you said, you're kind of burning the candle at both ends, it's a bit of a, like, you almost need to take the jump to take time off to have enough time, if you're going to do that stuff yourself, to look after it yourself. Otherwise you just don't have the time to chase it. So now that you have some solid results and have the time, hopefully you can really get some momentum, because then it allows you to focus more on your racing and be more valuable to brands.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a balance, and it's not my wheelhouse, that sort of business side of things. So it is something that I do need to work on. But all part of it.
It is all part of it. I think the biggest thing is just yeah, talk to people who have been involved in it for a while. Be okay with saying no to people and be patient, because I think you've got to back yourself and know that your value is only going to go up. And you see a lot of athletes who are just on that first, they start getting a win or two and then they get locked in on some pretty bad deals and it can really hold their career back. So the fact that you're not, that you've got a job still, and I think that longer term will actually work out really well for you. So be a hard ass and gravitate towards no before yes.
Did you have an agent ready?
I did, yeah. So my manager and I, Evan Gallagher, worked sort of together in that I would do a lot of the initial chats and try and bring people there. Not always. Sometimes he would often he'd actually still bring to the table. But then I was really hopeless, and Clint knows what I'm like. I'm really bad at asking people for money or that sort of thing. So I always have to have someone else do that for me. And so he would do all the negotiations and drastically change even what I had in my head to something that was much better. And I think I was really lucky in that I didn't trust Evan. I was like, what's he doing all this for? I was really lucky in that I had a person who was genuinely invested in just helping me, loved the sport, and really, yeah, it was from a really good place. So I think there's a lot of luck on that front. And Evan was my good luck in that regard. So, be careful of managers who are doing it like explicitly to make money, because it's obviously it's not a huge money sport. And so it can be, I think you got to be careful. You're better off finding someone who genuinely cares about you to look after that side of it.
It can be a bit like when you do the you can make the contact, but it's a bit hard to go into bat for yourself, right? And go, nah, like if they come back and just, I don't know, $5,000, you go, nah, I'm worth more than that. It just doesn't work, right? So for you to have the contact with them and then someone to go into bat and actually tell people what you're worth is very worthwhile, as opposed to you having to go, nah, I'm worth more, and it just doesn't work. So yeah, hopefully that can come up in the coming months or year, and it'll make racing a lot easier down the track financially.
I think you're lucky too in that you can back yourself for race wins. The prize money is, I think, has started to move in the right direction. It's been stagnant for so long, and now the PTO, Ironman, everyone's bumping up prize money in bigger races. So you've come into it's a good time to be an introvert in triathlon racing. You know, 7 years ago, I would have been like, this is probably the worst time to be an introvert. So in some regards, I know prize money's, you can still obviously double your paycheck with sponsor bonuses or more, but at least prize money start to come up a little bit after years of staying the same, despite obviously inflation and all the other cost of living and everything. So how much time are you going to you'll keep balancing between Ballarat and Melbourne? What's the plan like before Nice? Will you do a training camp somewhere, or obviously the weather's pretty horrid down there. Will you try and get away?
Yeah, I think that's the plan. I might try and get up north a little bit before Sunny Coast. If I can spend a few weeks up there, that would be ideal. The weather here is pretty grim up until about November. So, yeah.
Come up to Lennox. Clint will get you aero tested. Good little group here to train with. And we can work around what sessions you need to do. There's not too many people taking it super serious. So you're welcome. And I know Josh loves it, so we can get him up to help continue with the swimming.
Awesome. I'll probably take you up on that. So be careful what you offer.
Got camps and stuff. What? Steve's got a plan, doesn't he, to go north as well?
Yeah, so it's funny. I went back through a lot of Steve's best races and talked to him a lot about Apo's performance at Port and even leading into Busso, where I think he was in even better shape. And I think if you're going to go to world champs, it's going to be hard to be super competitive at the highest level if you haven't done an altitude block like all the top guys have done. And obviously the downside of that is it's expensive. It's a logistical nightmare. So we're just working our way around that, whether we can fit that in for Steve. He responds really well, even to 10 days. You know, there's So we're just, yeah, we're sort of working it out. And you know what it's like, Danny. We'll probably won't lock it in until 2 weeks before.
He's not going to race again this year, I don't think. So just change it all up.
No, he'll within about 2 weeks, he'll be itching to get out there. So
yeah,
got to hold him back.
Long term, Regan, what's the aim? Hit us with give us a drastic prediction. What do you hope to achieve in triathlon?
Oh man, I feel like I'm tooting my own horn here, but I want to be competitive with the best in the world. I don't see why not. I've got the drive. I don't have the resources as of yet, but I'm sure that will come. And yeah, I want to be at the pointy end of races, and I want to be one of the best in the world.
Excellent. I don't think you need to hold back on saying that. I think all the attributes are there. You've got the mindset. You've obviously got the physical talent. And I think there's that aerobic base from being a kid that will set you apart. I think we all believe. We believe.
And we look forward to seeing you up there with the absolute best. If not in Nice this year, then certainly in Kona next year. That's a less technical course. It's it might play to your strengths with the swim there as well. So hopefully, if it's not this year, it's next year, and we'll be certainly cheering for you the whole way along. So thank you so Danny, much.
Thank you very much. Do we have any fan questions, Danny? Before Regan goes, she might have.
I haven't asked fans for any questions in months, so no, sorry.
Good.
Was one fan question for you, Regan. It's how come you didn't actually wear the goggles that you promised all the fans before Port? How come you didn't wear them on race day?
Can you just give me some background on this?
So I'll do the background here because Regan won't talk it up as much, the introvert. So all week talking about this infection in the eye, there was kind of chat that, well, at one point I don't think she was going to be starting, but the answer they came up with was instead of missing the race, she was going to wear like full-faced goggles that cover her eye so there couldn't be any damage to her eyes, and it was going to be on the ride and on the run, and I was very much looking forward to seeing this on race day. And then out she comes on the ride with a visor on, no goggles, and out onto the run without them on. So I was very disappointed, and I want an answer.
Oh, I'm sorry to let you down. I actually received the goggles at about 6 o'clock on Saturday night, and I did put them on, and vision-wise they weren't ideal. And also I was confident that at that stage my eye had improved enough that I could pop a contact in for 9 hours and it would be okay. Don't tell my ophthalmologist because he told me not to, but I managed to get through it. But the goggles may make an appearance at some other stage. So, yeah.
So you were on antibiotics the whole lead up to the race?
Yeah, I'm still on antibiotics. Yeah, until I meant to stop them today, actually. So
that might be a world record in itself, winning an Ironman while on antibiotics, because it's so problematic with most athletes that I've had who had to do it. Like, it's just, it changes the way you absorb your fuel. Obviously there's fatigue going into the race that's just a bit different, so perhaps you would have been even faster without that. I'm pretty sure you would have been. So anyway, we're dribbling now. Thanks so much for your time. I'll see you at the next one, and thanks Danny, Clint, happy
thank you
Friday.
So much, guys, that was good.
Thanks for having me.
No worries.